I'm Tom Kennedy. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee has begun debating articles of impeachment against U.S. President Trump, with a vote in the full House expected before Christmas recess. Democrats have brought two main charges against Mr. Trump. That's abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler said that Mr. Trump has refused to cooperate with any phase of the investigation.
During the Watergate hearings, President Nixon turned over recordings of his conversations in the Oval Office. Later, President Clinton handed over his DNA. President Trump's obstruction was, by contrast, absolute.
Republican Jim Jordan of Ohio said the Democrats are motivated by one thing, and that is hatred of the president.
This is about one basic fact. The Democrats have never accepted the will of the American people. 3 weeks ago, Nancy Pelosi called the president of the United States an imposter, and the attacks on the president started before the election.
The panel is expected to vote on the articles within days, with a full House vote expected next week. If they are approved, the charges would move to a Senate trial where Republican majority is not likely to convict the president. The Justice Department's Inspector General spent hours testifying to the Senate Judiciary Committee Wednesday about Russian contacts with President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. Michael Horowitz told the panel that while the FBI had a legitimate basis to launch the investigation and was not motivated by political bias in doing so, there were major flaws in how the investigation is conducted. A committee chairman, Republican Lindsey Graham, said that the system failed, while California Democrat Dianne Feinstein said that the FBI investigations were based on facts and not political bias. The president has said that the report shows bias against his candidacy. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. An executive order issued by President Trump in interpreting members of the Jewish religion as part of distinct nationality is intended to help battle growing anti-Semitism on U.S. college campuses. Some major Jewish organizations are hailing that action because universities could lose federal funding if they don't stop discrimination against Jews on their campuses. Others are uncomfortable with a government action to create an ethnic categorization and also worry about its potential to suppress free speech at schools. On social media, some commenters noted how Nazi Germany also designated its Jewish citizens as a distinct nationality prior to the Holocaust. The release of a long-awaited report on the FBI's investigation of President Trump's 2016 presidential campaign has exposed deep fissures within the administration over the origins of the probe, pitting Mr. Trump and the Attorney General William Barr against FBI Director Christopher Wray and the Justice Department's watchdog. More from Reuters' Zachary Goldman.
Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz this week submitted a more than 400-page report, which concluded that the FBI's probe of Trump, dubbed Crossfire Hurricane, was approved by a senior FBI supervisor in line with protocol, and that he found no evidence of political bias in that decision. But Horowitz said his team found 17 omissions or errors, including in applications for surveillance warrants, and said he found all of this deeply disturbing. Both Democrats and Republicans tried to make political points out of Horowitz's testimony. Republican allies of President Donald Trump pressed the point that several agents in the probe showed bias against the candidate and broke the rules to target him. Democrats noted Horowitz's report refuted the right-wing conspiracy theory that a secretive group inside the government tried to take down candidate Trump.
The United States warned North Korea Wednesday that its numerous ballistic missile tests risk closing the door to a deal with Washington. Ambassador Kelly Craft told a meeting of the Council on North Korea's proliferation efforts that the ballistic missile tests, no matter their range, undermine regional security and stability and are a clear violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Disgraced film producer Harvey Weinstein reaches tentative $25 million deal with accusers, AP correspondent Mike Rossio.
There's a tentative $25 million settlement that would resolve nearly every sexual misconduct lawsuit brought against former Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein and his former studio's board. The tentative settlement was first reported by the New York Times and confirmed by the Associated Press. An attorney in the case says at least 29 actresses and former Weinstein employees have agreed to the deal. The New York Times reports 18 of the alleged victims would split $6.2 million of the settlement. A separate $18.5 million would go to those involved in a class action case.
That's Mike Rossio with AP. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
the Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea announces a new date for the country's long-awaited legislative election.
The Electoral Commission has just sent the message to the political parties to start registering their candidates for the legislative election to be held on the 16th of February 2020.
Faye Milimono is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party. Liberia's central bank releases new banknotes to help solve the country's liquidity problem. Is Kenya's government fighting corruption, or is it just conducting political theatrics? And the third round of Sudan peace talks have begun in Juba.
This meeting of today is about the evaluation of the agreement which was signed during the Sudanese Revolutionary Front when they were one group. Subsequently, tomorrow we are going to discuss based on facts.
Gabon sets up counter-poaching efforts to save the elephants, and a Senegalese creative mathematician and fashion designer joins the San Francisco Fashion Incubator. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Independent National Elections Commission, known as CNET, told political parties Wednesday night that they should begin registering their candidates for legislative elections to take place February 16, 2020. According to the commission, registration of candidates will take place December 18 to the 27, 2019. The much-awaited and controversial election was originally scheduled to take place in December this year, but it was in October. It was in October this year to an unspecified date. Opposition parties have been holding protests against what they say is an attempt by President Alpha Conde to seek a third term. The commission's announcement came as a regional delegation is again visiting Conakry. Faye Milimono, leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party, says it is not clear whether the opposition will field candidates for the proposed February 2020 legislative election.
As of today, no one can say which political party from the opposition side is ready to participate because there are so many problems we are facing actually with the registry, and the process itself has started in violation of the law of the land.
President Alpha Conde is organizing or has suggested a constitutional referendum, and the opposition, you have said, that perhaps this is an attempt for the president to seek another term. Where are we in this discussion?
We are still in that debate. As of yesterday, we were on the streets to demonstrate again, to send, you know, that message to the president and to his government that we are not going to accept the constitution to be changed, because what we're talking about, it is not amending the constitution. Nobody is opposed to any amendment to the constitution. But what we're talking about here in Guinea, it is changing the whole constitution. It's like taking the constitution that we have now, put it in the trash, and start with a new constitution. Once that new constitution is adopted, the president is going to say, okay, the limit of term said in the constitution that is no longer in place cannot be invoked actually. So he's going to stand again for another term. So we are still in that fight, and we are going to prevent him from changing our constitution for the purpose of having another term.
We heard of visiting former African leaders to Guinea. What can you tell us?
Yes, so we have a very important delegation actually. The former president of Nigeria, the former president of Benin, the general secretary of Mano River Organization, and you have also leaders from NDI, from Washington. All of them are actually here in Conakry to meet with civil society organizations, political parties, also the government and the president himself.
What do you think the West African former leaders are telling you?
So far, what we can say is they seem to see the problem the same way we're looking at it. In Africa, people have to learn that Law is the law. If you are elected for one term and you have a chance to have another term, which is the last term, you have to go. So far, what they have told us as the message they're going to send to the president is they will do their best with all the leaders in West Africa to prevent any trouble in any country in West Africa just because someone wants to stay on power until he died. They said they're going to be on our side to tell that message to the president.
Faye Milimono is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. The Central Bank of Liberia has released to commercial banks new Liberian banknotes to help solve the country's current liquidity problem. But some Liberians want to know the origin of the new money. The announcement comes as it has been reported that Liberian banks did not have enough foreign or domestic currencies and that the government is said to be owing civil servants 2 months of salary arrears. Minister of Information Eugene Nabwe says the government did not print any new banknotes. Instead, he says the money has always been in the central bank vault.
The Central Bank of Liberia is the custodian of Liberian currency and Liberian banknotes. So it should not be even newsworthy when the central bank performs a routine function to serve commercial banks with our currency, with our banknotes, used and unused. It comes from the vault of the central bank. The central bank has always had money in its vault, and from time to time, they will infuse the banknotes into the economy, both unused and used banknotes.
The concern is that, okay, why didn't the bank put this money in the market when Liberia has suffered, at least for the past few months or so, with lack of the shortage of currency? And this is also coming on the heel of this Representative Koluba making the allegations that...
It's an ignorant representative because he will realize that from time to time, the central bank does infuse new banknotes into the market. So for somebody to say because they have some new banknotes, it means that new currency has been printed. It's quite unfortunate because the central bank has always done this. What we have said as a country is that most of our currency, our banknotes, are outside of the banking sector. A majority of our transactional currency, the banknotes, are outside of the banking sector, and we have instituted measures to fix that problem. Does that mean that the vaults of the central bank are bereft of any currency, of any money at all? No, we have never said that.
When I spoke with you the last time, last week or the week before, you mentioned also millions of United States dollars have come into the country. Can you tell us the origin of the money, of those U.S. dollars?
It came from the United States of America, where our reserve is being held. It's routine matter. The central bank brings in money. There should be money from time to time. It's the routine matter for all central banks in the world. The only reason we are having this discussion here in Liberia now is that we have some ignorant people, some conspiracy theorists, who will use every routine government action to try to rile up the public. You know, but we are focused. We are consistent. Like I said to you earlier, we just signed a program with the IMF, where the IMF own press release commended the reform that we are taking in both the monetary and fiscal sectors. To resuscitate the economy, we will continue to make progress. So we can't be distracted by these people. It's routine. The government has not printed any new currency.
Does this mean now the government is going to meet its arrears for the public workers?
We don't pay public workers from the central bank. The central bank is carrying out a monetary function by supplying the commercial banks. We pay civil servants from the revenue we collect that goes into our consolidated account. As we do well with collection, we continue to pay. As I speak, some civil servants are receiving pay for October, some are receiving pay for November, and we continue to do that. We might not be able to make the pay roll for the month of December, but we are targeting October and November to complete the payment for civil servants.
Liberia's Information Minister Eugene Nabwe was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 12th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Last week, the governor of Kenya's capital, Nairobi, was charged with economic crimes involving millions of dollars. The arrest appears to be in line with President Uhuru Kenyatta's pledge to stamp out corruption. But as Rael Ombuo reports, reports from Nairobi, analysts are skeptical that Governor Mbuvi would be convicted.
The governor of Nairobi County, Gideon Mbuvi, was released on bail Wednesday, 5 days after he was arrested on corruption charges. Kenya's public prosecutor said Mbuvi and a group of associates gained $3.5 million through illegal procurement and payment schemes. This is not the first arrest of a high-profile government official on corruption charges since Kenyatta assumed power in 2013. Mbuvi's predecessor, Evans Kidero, was arrested in April. Other top officials arrested in recent years include the chairman of the National Land Commission, the managing director of the Kenya Railway Corporation, and the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Public Service. However, political analyst Herman Manyora says not many believe Governor Mbuvi's arrest will be a turning point. He notes that none of those previously arrested have gone to jail.
I think it is difficult to believe they are serious. Seeing as it were, there are no convictions, at least even the time it takes. Even just to conclude a case, you know, cases that Goldenberg issues and what have you and releasing, they may not have gone to court, but the investigations, those which have gone to court 5, 6, 4 years, really, that is not indicative of a person who is serious about fighting corruption.
Nicholas Kimanzi is a human rights defender who has taken corruption cases to court that involve politicians infringing on the rights of the poor. He says politicians accused of corruption know how to work the justice system to evade prosecution.
When you get the suspect to court, they either apply for anticipatory bail or something happens and now they have a right to bail. And at the end of the day, nobody follows up. Once these suspects are out on bail, first of all, they go and interfere with the witnesses and the evidence. So after some time, you will hear the office of the DPP saying that we did not find sufficient evidence to charge these people, so they've been set free.
President Kenyatta has said that he will not relent in the fight against corruption until the country is swept clean of corruption. Kimanzi says rooting out corruption will take systematic reforms, not just high-profile arrests.
We may need to enact more punitive laws. We may need to change the way we approach corruption cases so that if you're found to have stolen from public coffers, then you need, first of all, to resign, you need to leave office, and then it needs to be a capital offense such that even the terms of bail needs to be so strict so that you can use this as a deterrent.
Last year, President Kenyatta ordered a life cell audit of all public servants. The survey found that at least one-third of government workers were unable to account for their declared wealth. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
The third round of peace talks between the Sudanese government and several rebel groups operating in Darfur, Blue Nile, and southern Kordofan regions got underway Wednesday in South Sudan's capital, Juba. South Sudanese government mediators say the talks are aimed at ending years of conflict and to reach agreements on security and political issues. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudanese mediators say various rebel groups in war-torn regions of Darfur, Blue Nile, and southern Kordofan are expected to strike a long-awaited peace deal with the Sudanese government during the 2 weeks of talks. Mediators began the day by evaluating the implementation of a ceasefire signed in August and October during the first and second round of talks, according to South Sudan government official and mediator Dio Mathok.
This meeting of today is about the evaluation of the agreement which was signed during the Sudanese Revolutionary Front when they were one group. But subsequently, tomorrow we are going to discuss based on tracks, and the groups are going to table their framework agreement tomorrow.
The heads of the various rebel coalitions have expressed optimism on ending hostilities with Khartoum during this round of talks. Abdul Aziz Al-Hilu is head of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement and Army North, or SPLMA North, a coalition of three opposition parties at the talks.
We are optimistic that this coming round will achieve positive results towards a logical end to the peace process.
Al-Hilu says the rebel groups believe the issue of national identity and a failure to define the relationship between religion and state are the root causes of Sudan's internal political problems.
We have to confront the root causes of the conflict and lay a strong foundation for national unity, correct nation building format. This is what lacking in Sudan since independence.
Mathoka says he expects the Sudanese government and the rebel groups to strike a deal on political and security issues. He did not elaborate on those issues. He also says the parties are discussing humanitarian access and power sharing. Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, deputy president of the Sudan Transitional Military Council, who is leading the government delegation, arrived in Juba from Khartoum yesterday. Dagalo says his team has a full mandate to negotiate a peace settlement with all of the rebel groups. The talks mediated by the South Sudan government and backed by the African Union and regional bloc IGAD are aimed at ending years of conflict between Khartoum and the rebel groups operating in Darfur, the Blue Nile region, southern Kordofan, and eastern Sudan. The rebels say the people living in those areas have been marginalized, oppressed, and discriminated by the previous regime of ousted President Omar el-Bashir. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
More than 70% of the African forest elephant species has been wiped out, primarily by poachers who slaughter them for their ivory. Park rangers are on the front lines defending the elephants. But in Gabon, park rangers, also known as eco guards, are not going it alone. The U.S. military is joining the fight by helping to train the rangers who protect the elephants. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb gives us an exclusive look at the counter-poaching effort in central Gabon.
This cadence brings hope to Lope National Park, because these eco guards are training for the fight against poaching, a fight that can turn deadly.
Could somebody brief your medical plan?
And U.S. forces are increasing their chances of survival.
So generally the route we're going to take to do this patrol is leaving the Sadom, head to the main road, and then head south across this bridge.
VOA is the first news media outlet to embed with a U.S. military team during a counter-poaching mission.
Watch where you're stepping. We've seen like giant snakes down there.
U.S. Army Captain Kevin Chapla leads the team.
So right now our training patrol they're about 200 meters from the objective, the suspected camp of about four poachers. From here, they're probably going to send out a recon element, see what they can see, come back, develop a plan, and then raid the suspected poaching camp.
Training operations like this one began in Tanzania in 2009, officials say.
We not only help them preserve the wildlife, but at the same time, we're disrupting criminal organizations and we're helping them develop a better future.
And U.S. military efforts started in Gabon last year. Months of training has improved techniques to capture poachers and preserve evidence.
J'enlève les chaussures pour essayer de vérifier s'il n'y a pas des papiers cachés ou des informations qui peut nous mener à bien.
These eco guards are highly motivated individuals, and teaching them is not only is it fun, but it's easy.
Unlike counter poaching training from other nations, Chapla says this partnership with Gabon's National Park Agency is geared towards self-sustainment.
Now we're producing a core instructor group that can actually teach the force these skills and promulgate it throughout the entire ranks. Really, it's a proof of concept for them being able to instruct their own, so it's pretty big.
One thing not included in this mission, weapons training, something the Rangers say they desperately want. That's because until this year, the government didn't allow eco guards to carry weapons.
You can't say to a poacher, oh, sorry, guys, stay quiet and give me your gun. 3 months ago, we were not allowed to carry weapons. Now we have weapons, and the poaching is decreasing.
Officials hope these changes, along with additional international training and support, will accelerate Gabon's counter-poaching offensive. But time is running out for the elephants, and it may not be enough.
So I'm proud that we've made the progress that we've made, but it's still catastrophic, so we still have to do more. You may win some battles, but the war keeps going.
And so the foot soldiers in that war keep marching on, determined to protect the endangered elephants for their country and for the world. Carla Babb, VOA News, Lope, Gabon.
Senegalese creative mathematician and fashion designer Dia Rabuso has been selected to join the San Francisco Fashion Incubator, which is supported by Macy's. Rabuso's work is unique because it fuses math and technology with pride in Senegalese tradition. She spoke with Ricky Shryak.
So when working on this collection, that's the idea. It was very much like, how do I celebrate what's ours with pride, but in a way that's contemporary and wearable. So for me, the way that comes up is that the pieces are very powerful in the sense that every piece is a statement piece. So this is a collection where, first of all, it's the first collection where I use math algorithms to divide all the prints. And every single print is super loud and it's a statement piece. The idea of convertibility and comfort was very present, which is how queens used to dress before. Like, if you look at traditional Senegalese clothing, there are no sizes. There is no small, medium, large. Everything is one size fit all and you adjust it to be comfortable. Whether it's the wrap skirt, the boo-boo.
Your background is as a mathematician as well. Can you talk a little bit about how that's unique in this clothing line, how you've incorporated mathematics in? Can you kind of expand upon that idea? Because I love the idea of the merging of the lingerie history with mathematics.
Yeah, so basically my background is in mathematics and I call myself a creative mathematician. I just like saying that because anytime you say it, everybody's like, what? And then you have an opportunity to talk more. So yeah, basically in this collection, this is the first time I've experimented using algorithms to design. So when I started the brand, it was very clear to me that it had to have a math focus. I knew that I wanted it to be very geometric. I wanted people to look at the clothes and know, hey, this is a math person behind it and this is celebrating math. But it was mostly like the clothes were asymmetrical, it was geometric. But the idea of math itself in the process only began when I went to Stanford and I had this amazing professor and she was like, the first time I heard the term creative mathematics, because like we'd have math education classes and she would bring us sugar cubes and paint and ask us to paint the sugar and come up with an equation. I'm like, oh my God. So like that process of how it was so freeing to do math, it felt like you were doing art. I was like, I want to bring that to my work. I want to bring that to my work as a designer. And I wasn't sure how until last year. I started experimenting with graphing equations and coloring.
How do you want your fashion to be seen in the context of Senegalese fashion, or do you want it to be seen in that context?
Yeah, I think that where I'm from, like Senegal is home, and it's super important for me to celebrate that in my work. I call myself a global citizen. Like, I grew up in Senegal, but I left when I was 16. I went to high school in Norway and in college in Minnesota, then lived in New York, now I'm in Silicon Valley. So I feel like I've been all around the world, but the one thing in common is that I'm Senegalese, and I'm carrying that heritage with me everywhere I go. The term African fashion bothers me just because Africa is 54 countries and thousands of languages and ethnic groups. You can't reduce fashion to one thing. So for me, it's important to celebrate. I say that my brand merges tradition and algorithms, or tradition and technology. And that's how I kind of position myself as a brand. And tradition to me is a word that encompasses my history and my culture without pigeonholing me.
That was Diarra Bousso, entrepreneur, creative mathematician, and founder of the fashion label Diarra Blue. She spoke with Ricky Shryak. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. Guinea's Independent National Elections Commission, CNET, told political parties Wednesday night that they should begin registering their candidates for legislative elections to take place February 16, 2020. According to the commission, registration of candidates will take place December 18 to the 27, 2019. The much-awaited and controversial election was originally scheduled to take place in December this year, but it was postponed in October this year to an unspecified date. Opposition parties have been holding protests against what they say is an attempt by President Alpha Conde to seek a third term. And the Central Bank of Liberia has released to commercial banks new Liberian banknotes to help solve the country's liquidity problem. And that is it for this Thursday, December 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping you have a great day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nnamdi Kanu, the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra, talks about the efforts and challenges to secede from Nigeria. The struggle for independence on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
It's summertime in the Southern Hemisphere, but if you're north of the equator, border crossings will bring you some warmth with our Psychedelic Sunshine Show. You'll hear from the best Californian musicians of the 60s, like Sonny and Cher, The Monkees, and The Beach Boys. Tune into Border Crossings on December 19th for the grooviest songs in the world. Only on The Voice of America.